the easy way.
Yeah.
And do you have any closing thoughts for our listeners? Again, folks, we're speaking with Larry Sador, the founder and brewmaster at Crux Fermentation Project in Bend, Oregon.
Yeah, my only closing thoughts are keep an open mind when you're drinking the non-alcoholic beers. They have come light years in the last 2 to 3 years. And, you know, you cannot replicate exactly beer. If you're expecting exactly to have a beer experience sans the alcohol, that's going to be a little tough. But if you want the experience of malt and hops and a, I'll call it a lightly fermented product, you're going to be quite happy. It's very, very refreshing, very encouraging. Myself, I quit drinking beer when it's, you know, approaching 90 degrees. And I'm so happy to have my my Nomo that I can consume now. It's refreshing.
Larry, thank you so much.
You got it, Doug. Pleasure talking to you.
That was my conversation with Larry Sador, founder and brewmaster at Crux Fermentation Project in Bend, Oregon. I mentioned the top of the show coming up on my soberversary. In case you're curious, that date is September 25th. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. I want to thank my guest, Larry Sador. A big thank you to everyone out there fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. Free Culture Radio is a volunteer production for Community Radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's Audio Port Service. Theme music for Free Culture Radio was composed and performed by Tom Nickel and Four Dimensional Nightmare. Free Culture Radio is available as a podcast or direct download. Find links at the website kboo.fm/freeculture. Free Culture Radio is on Facebook. It's at facebook.com/kboofreeculturradio. Please give it a like. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Hey, Michael here. I'm with the Tin Can Phone Podcast, a radio show where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the source. We tell you the story from the inside out. So make sure to check us out on KBOO Community Radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m.
May your eyes be the last that I see. Will you hold me? Will you hold me? Until the
listening to an incredibly beautiful song called Will You Hold Me, written by my guest, Crystal. How do I pronounce your last name?
Menezes.
Menezes. Crystal Menezes, a friend and colleague, and that's part of this project called Last Words.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Culture in Motion. This is a once-monthly show where we talk about the intersection between art, culture, music, politics, activism. And you and I have been working together, so I wanted to invite you on and talk about your work.
Thank you for having me. I'm so grateful.
Yeah, I've heard you tell over the years, you're always explaining your work. You've asked me to participate in Last Words,
mm-hmm.
and I haven't been able to. But listening to the music, so much comes to mind, so we're going to have fun. I've got a lot of questions.
Awesome.
Yeah, so this is a convergence. Like, you're an artist, you're a professional musician, instrumentalist, composer, vocalist, but this project involves this other aspect of your work as a death doula.
Mm-hmm.
This is all mystified, you know it is. So explain, what, first of all, what is a death doula?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a death doula is someone, it's an extra person on the team that cares for you as you're dying.
Yeah.
So I am a death doula, I'm a hospice chaplain, spiritual director, grief and loss counselor. So I have a lot of different ways to access people and their pain and support them. So a death doula, we serve in different ways. It depends on how we're asked. So sometimes I'll come into someone's life when they get a diagnosis. Sometimes I'm doing the end of life officiant work, doing planning for end of life, or I'm there bedside. And my background is music therapy. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I entered this work, was singing bedside to people who are dying.
Yeah, I've read and I've heard you recount a very touching story of one of your earlier experiences, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this intersection between the death industry and poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And how people don't have often the means to transition.
Yeah.
In ways in which they're held and supported.
Mm-hmm.
So is that the lyrics, Will You Hold Me,
mm-hmm.
is a reflection of that, yeah?
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. so all the songs, they're legacy stories.
Okay.
They're, when I'm bedside with people, they tell me their stories. And it's such a blessing to hear these stories. And I turn their stories into songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that we see ourselves in each other's stories, and we feel that warmth of humanness. And it's the closest that I think that I've been to the, what I feel is the truth. And I think that those stories are a representation of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what these songs, that's where these songs come from and what they're about. So Will You Hold Me? There. So each song is really to inspire conversation about death, because people are afraid of death, there's stigmatism about talking about death. People think if I talk about death, that means I'm gonna die, that godlike complex of if I even talk about it, I have that much power.
Yeah, you'll bring it on you. Yourself. Right?
And I always tell people, well, if you have that much power, let's talk about winning the lottery, because right? we don't know and we don't have that much power. Yeah. But not talking about it creates spaces of isolation, and there's this cycle of isolation where there's more suffering there. So these songs are for people to have conversations about their own lives, and their healing. And I notice when people talk about death or start to have more of a relationship with it, their lives change. They start living life in a different way.
So how many years have you been in your practice?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I started doing art therapy and music therapy bedside very young, just in my college days. But me finding that path of discernment into being a death doula was around 2014,
okay.
because I experienced a lot of death in my life.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the support. I never had conversations with my family about how do I cope with this pain? I mean, we've talked about death, but when the time came where people started dying in my life, it hurt so bad, and I didn't have anybody that I could. Actually, the people that I leaned on, those are the folks that died.
Mm-hmm. So you lost a lot of your support.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that being involved in this work changes your life, and one of the questions that comes up for me is I imagine taking on some type of learning that is challenging, and then eventually I achieve some level of expertise or mastery over whatever that is, right? Then does it become mundane, or is this work something that continually changes you?
Oh, continually changes me. Because each human being has a unique and different story.
Mm-hmm.
So the way, I think when I talk with people in the grief and loss group too, is that we grieve and we feel pain in very diverse ways. So that's how we're always changing and growing through it and healing through it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it never... Yeah, the word you use, mundane, it never feels like that.
Yeah.
Like each person that I meet, it's this growing together. It's this self and the other.
It sounds like very interpersonal and potentially draining. How do you take care of yourself while you do this work?
Yeah, I tell the stories.
Yeah.
Stories have saved my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so these songs are a way of how I cope.
Mm-hmm.
When someone in my care passes away, when they die, I feel it very intensely. I think, we hear stories of like different hospice social workers or different folks, and they just see it as a routine or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not like that. I think many of us death workers, we feel it deeply, so we do have to take care of ourselves. But I do it by telling people stories and music and singing. Because every time we take a breath, I mean, that's a cleansing. It's a detoxification in a way. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I sing and I move that through. It's this natural cycle of breath. The breath that takes us into the world and out of the world. That's the same type of breath I used to heal and take care of myself.
That's pretty deep. Do you want to introduce another one of the songs? And
then we'll
come back and talk more.
Yeah. Let's do the song Dear Love.
Okay.
Only love, only love, only love. child, we live for this day. We finger paint clouds and imagine volcanoes of bubbles for this day. We embrace and create secret handshakes for this day. My child, we make memories with the essence of matter. Love trusts death as rebirth. And truth is, I do not know where I'll be once I leave this body. But I believe my presence returns to the matter of our memories. So I want you to feel the chills on your skin as you sail the winds of your joyous journey. I want you to feel the stillness of spirit's pure salvation in haunting situation. Because when afraid, I want you to know fear is to courage as the unknown is to trust. Believing in what you can't see is the essence of when, the essence of faith. My essence is love.
Listening to Culture in Motion, and I am talking to Crystal Meneses, the Death Doula, and also the creator of the Last Words Project. And I think we have a caller, so not yet. We don't have a caller. Lines are open if you want to call in. I don't know the number by heart. Let me see. It's 503-231-8187. So give us a shout. So Crystal, this music is amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, it really is. It's moving. I was, it's easy for me to be moved to tears, not only because the music is beautiful, but because of the themes, right? Mm-hmm. And what you're accessing. However, on a technical level and on an administrative level, this is a huge undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, talk about that energy and effort.
Yeah, this is a large project, and there was a lot of different barriers. One, funding. People don't want to fund death. They want to fund life.
Ironically, I beg to differ.
Oh, yeah, tell me. Tell me how you're differing. Yeah,
well, the military expenditure seems to be the biggest thing.
Okay.
Okay, of course, you know I'm going to take it there. But, no, go back.
Good point. No, right. Good point. So it was difficult for me to find arts funding for a project like this. And then also, this is the first cemetery concert series in the history of Oregon, is what we were told. And so it was just... it was hard to book a gig at a cemetery. I called cemeteries across the state because the first idea was like, I want to do a tour. I want to like write these songs that I'm writing bedside, and I want to build a community around death across the state. So I called all kinds of cemeteries, and I heard all kinds of different no's. My favorite response was a lady in Silverton who said, oh, she's like, well, sweetie, we have a farmer's market you can sing at. It was like people just really didn't understand that I wanted to purposely sing in a cemetery and have that embrace of life and death in community and space. And so there was a lot of barriers. So there was funding, there was performing inside cemeteries, and then also I think the content. So it was finding the right people to make this music with. And so the people in this band, they are some of my closest friends that I've known for a very, very long time. And everyone in the band has a story of grief and loss. So we were all coming together, healing individually as a collective, and then moving that into community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I consider everything that you're sharing, there's this level of commitment to the art and the craft, the craftsmanship of executing, you know, writing the parts and playing and recording and performing, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then there's this other aspect that really is community. So like what you just described, it's almost like you have to rely, because of the barriers in people's consciousness, you have to rely on people you trust and bring them into the project.
Yeah.
In order to even make any ground, right?
Yep.
Yeah. It's another thing that comes up. I mean, there's a lot of humor that comes up for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are like, yeah, she's crazy.
Uh-huh.
She's that crazy deaf lady.
Yeah.
You know, and being a fan of music, it's like stereotypically one would expect this to sound like metal or really gothy, right?
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Yeah.
Because those are the images that we associate with music that confronts death.
Exactly. Because we're domesticated to be afraid of it.
Right.
And that has to do with the death corporations. So if we want to get into death activism, they want us to be isolated in our pain and grief, mm-hmm. so we can get taken advantage of. I mean, the death industry, they weren't regulated till I think the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so much to that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I that's what we're trying to address, is to create connection around death, which feels uncomfortable for some people, because we're taught that, yeah, like that goth image that you got right away,
right.
or that scared image, mm-hmm. that's what people think of when they think of cemetery and they think of death.
Right.
And we also think of death as a punishment, and that death is a failure. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of associations that are domesticated into us.
Have you, do you do a lot of study of death throughout different cultures globally and historically, mm-hmm. as part of your practice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's one reason. So I'm Filipino, and I remember through my grief when my auntie died, my first memory of death surfaced, which was my grandpa's funeral in the Philippines. So my family, we didn't have enough money to go back to the Philippines when my grandpa passed. And so they sent us a VHS. They videotaped it. And so the videotape came in the mail, and I was little. I was like maybe first or second grade. And my dad's like, the video's here. Come on, everyone. Like, family time. We're gathering around. And there's humor in it, because usually we're gathering around to watch a different type of movie.
Yeah.
But this was my grandpa's funeral. And that was my very first memory of death. And it was so different than the other picture that's painted, that comes, you know, from my mom's Western culture. She's white. So there was, my grandpa's body was laid out. They were having celebrations for days. I mean, his body was in the middle of the house, and people were eating food and telling stories and dancing and singing, and all the emotions were there. And it was intergenerational. It wasn't keep the kids away or let's be isolated in this. It was, I saw community around death and it was so loving. And my dad looked at me and he said, "You do this for me." And then, so when my auntie died, when I was, you know, in my 30s, this is way later, I just had this really deep pain of, I'm not going to be able to do something like this for my dad. So that's where that, when you asked about culture and death, yeah. that's actually why I became a death doula also, was because I wanted to do this for my dad, and I knew that it might not be possible. And so even though that's not really the path that I took, that's what brought me here, and I ended up doing death and poverty work.
Wow.
So it's interesting, like following those whispers or finding that path of discernment. You think in life you're going to be moving to this place,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't necessarily take you there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's beautiful, Crystal. Do we have a caller? Did I hear the phone ringing? Okay. So the death corporations, shout out to Desmond. That was a vocalist and one of my comrades and local MCs that's on a lot of these songs. And shout out to MDC, Multi-Death Corporations, Millions of Dead Cops and so forth, you know, a punk band, old school, and has some roots in Portland recently. So, and I'm actually working on a thing with Emergency Hearts where we're releasing an MDC song. But I just had to name that because a lot of our listeners are hard core adherence of news and public affairs and information that is critical of these systems of oppression that are rooted in capitalist exploitation of life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering if you have any data-oriented information mm-hmm. where you could talk about how these death corporations operate and exploit people,
mm-hmm.
you know, with figures or details for those listeners who want to hear, like, yeah, tell us more about the death corporations.
Yeah. Well, what I can do is there a way to send mm-hmm. links and then people...
Yeah, we'll publish them on our website if people were to go to Culture in Motion.
Okay.
And look up, then there will be archive shows and maybe we can have some links.
Yeah. That's it. I think the best I can do mm-hmm, is mm-hmm. that just... There's a lot of great research that's done. There's a lot of activist groups and community coming together.
Mm-hmm.
And, but there's, I mean, our bodies are institutionalized all the way until we die.
Right.
That's something like to think about right there.
Yeah. And there are these events, there's like birth. You know, and mm-hmm. in heteronormative, you know, Judeo-Christian, patriarchal, there's marriage,
mm-hmm.
and then there's death.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you discover is anytime you're engaged in one of those events,
mm-hmm.
there's like these sky-high prices associated with everything.
Oh, yeah. Like,
and you're so vulnerable, and it's so important, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the cost... So I do have a song that is about that. It's called The Conversation.
Mm.
And so when I started doing this work, I started just to apply for a bunch of jobs because that's how I'm curious. So I want to get the information. So I wanted to do end of life counsel with people, planning, because I noticed that there's a lot of grief when someone dies and they're overwhelmed by end of life and all of the logistical things that we have to do, right? Planning the funeral, you know, assets, all of these different things are so overwhelming.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to find work where I can plan with people, and then also people have grief around, did I do the right thing? You know, did I do the right thing for my mom? Is that what she wanted? Is this what she would have wanted? We never talked about it.
Yep.
So I'm just going for it. And when you're in a space of grief, it's a space of trauma. You're not using the prefrontal cortex, you know? You're not using executive functioning.
Right.
You're very emotional and you're very vulnerable.
Yep.
And so these corporations, they take advantage of that. So what I did was I applied to Dignity Memorial and I got a sales job there, and it was during the pandemic. And my sales manager said, one of the first things that she said was, oh, you're coming in at the right time. We're making so much money. You're going to make so much money. We're making billions.
Hmm.
And like people, like they would like promote you to have an office space when you sold enough. And they call it the bells and whistles. So like if I was able to sell you, you know, upgrade you to a certain urn or casket, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so I was just disgusted by this. Mm. But I wanted to know how they were doing it. So I took all these jobs and I got fired a bunch because ethically it didn't feel right. And I would say something and then I became a problem. Right? Yeah. That's the pattern of when we come in and we do equity work in institutions. But what I did, though, is I took the sales manual, which is labeled The Conversation, and I wrote this song. So this song has Desmond Spann on mm-hmm. it, and he's playing he's playing a person where his mom just passed, and he's stepping into a mortuary. And these lyrics... some of them are directly from that sales manual.
Wow.
To make these sales.
Man. Yeah. Let's check out The Conversation. It's not on the, I don't think we might not have a copy of it here with us in the studio. I have heard the song. It's an amazing song. I was actually trying to write a part for it but ran out of time. The project that you're working on, this is the third year. So you're going to be doing it again in August?
Yeah. So okay. we've been doing it every August.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Every August. And are you going to have the same cast mostly if everybody's available? Are you trying to rotate in others?
Yep. Okay. Yeah. So when I first started the project, the vision was I would love people to write their own death songs, their own songs, and invite different people in to this project. And that's what actually exactly what happened the second year. So My Voice Music, mm-hmm. they did a project called Death Jams because their executive director recently passed away.
Right, shout out to you.
Yeah. And so I saw what they were doing and I invited them to sing. Mm. So we had youth performers singing their death jams. And then they also did a partnership with the Dougie Center. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. we had youth come and share those songs. So that's, and music is a way to process our grief.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was the intention, and that's what keeps happening. And I got calls from, I have a chaplain who just called me and he has his own album and I can't wait to hear it.
Wow.
Yeah, so everyone's welcome. I just reach out.
You're making me think of things that I've never really thought about, like, you know, the actual cultural need for holidays that, you know,
mm-hmm.
would acknowledge and integrate death into our culture,
yeah.
and create a space for people to healthily. Other cultures have this, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we think of like Dia de los Muertos, but we don't have anything like that right now. This Last Days project, where do you want to take it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to take it places beyond where it is currently?
I would love for. Well, yeah, we're just really planting the seeds now mm-hmm. because there's, when you come to these concerts, you can see that there's so much work to do. And there already was a little bit of change in the energy. That's what people said. The first, I think the first concert, people were, you know, they were feeling kind of uncomfortable and fear. And then their own grief was coming up. And then the second series, I mean, people were dancing in the cemetery. People were playing. People were having lunch. People were telling stories. So I wanted to keep growing in community, making relationships, mm-hmm. and people sharing stories. And once it gets to that point where we can have all of these feelings be expressed and supported, yeah, I'd love to have different people in different states say, we want to do a cemetery concert series.
Right.
Yeah, and them do it themselves. I think like some of the best compliments of my work mm-hmm. is when you see a program that I've built and someone else doing it. and making it their own,
doing it
in their way.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm hoping, like, all these songs are public domain.
Yeah.
I want people to sing these songs. People, grief and loss counselors are calling me saying, we're using your songs as points of healing conversation. That's where I just hope that it spreads and that people start using music and community to address their pain.
So for our listeners who might want to find some of this music online, it's public domain, it's available for free.
Mm-hmm.
So last words on YouTube, like, what are people going to search?
Yeah, it's on all of the distribution
platforms.
Mm-hmm. So last words live album.
Okay.
So we recorded the album live at the cemetery.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and now the more kind of adolescent or juvenile part of me has to ask these questions. What about, the spirit realm? And have you had, like, what you would call paranormal or supernatural experiences doing this work?
Well, I believe that the seen and the unseen embrace each other as I'm creating music. And, I have different rituals that I do before I write music. So the song that you heard earlier, Only Love, there's a lot of different conversation points in that song, but it was the conversations are, what happens after we die? What do you think happens after we die? And then also I was reading all of these near-death experiences and people that have died and come back.
Yeah.
And that's what that song's about too. And then also people were writing me last words letters. I built these altars and I put them in parks and I asked people to write their last words. And would you change your last words to the person that you have lost? And what would they be? And people were writing me letters and a human theme came through and it was, where are you? Are you okay? I had a letter that said, are you proud of me? And they listed out, like, all of these beautiful things that they've done in life. And so that song, Dear Love, is a collective of all of that communication happening with the living and the dying. And then also the message that I want my daughter to know is that energy can't die, it only transforms, and we're only love. That's where that comes from. But when I wrote the song, I sat down at the piano and I asked for the unseen to sing through me, to move through me, to deliver to send the messages that the people that I'm gonna cross paths with may need to hear. So absolutely, I feel like I'm always in relationship there.
Yeah, you're channeling.
Yeah.
Now, does religion play a role in your practice to you?
Mm-hmm.
Not so much, other people's orientation towards it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm an interfaith chaplain.
Yeah.
So I work with people who have faith and non-faith folks and everything in between.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have beliefs and I have faith. And
yeah.
So for me, that's a way that I move through. And it's interesting to watch a death and witness a death and be with someone that has so much conflict around belief, not having belief or having it, or spiritual trauma that's rooted in religious practices. So I always invite community to talk about that type of spiritual trauma.
Because
beliefs comfort us.
Yeah, it's just, there's a lot of wisdom in what you're sharing, and I'm wondering, are you going to write a book at any point so that you can share that information in a way that's not just focused on music?
I don't know.
Yeah.
You're giving me the idea right now. Maybe.
Okay, maybe you need to. Okay.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Let's do it. Let's
the conversation.
Yeah, we found it. Let's thank you.
Yeah,
Tammy.
Back to the death activism. Yeah.
Let's listen to the conversation.
All right,
certain sound no son wants to hear. Mother's gone and my heart fills with tears. Twisted man, I'm wishing for another position where I don't make in the life decision. Feeling comprehension, addiction, friction, getting mind haunted. Feel assault, her life I lost.
Come and sit down, I'm sorry for your loss. Thank you for choosing us. Come and sit down, I'm sorry for your loss. We have much to discuss.
This is so overwhelming.
Perfect for a Sally.
Before you go, before your body's lowered, know your final resting place will show how much you love by the dough we spend. And since I love her a lot, of course I will cop a plot. The spaces for the fam to ride together forever, for no matter the cost, no matter the basis, no matter the sense. I am not basis, so doesn't it make sense? I need a moment. Gotta get a glass of water, sir. I see you won't quit. You're going off, you're sounding off of what she want, but what she want, we wish you up, my mind is gone. Thanks for your help. As my eyes swell, these whistles and bells stacking your cells off toes in my tails, my tears in my wells, flipping the scales. Death work pays well. The graving the ox, angels and gods, stone carving costs, rich off my harm, turned on the charm, sound the alarms. Don't know what to say, let the band play.
Intense. I love the juxtaposition of the upbeat, you know, vibration. So,
yeah, I tried to do theater type feel to really, because it's, yeah, just to make it feel like a show, like how like unauthentic it is.
Well, I mean, honestly, like when I listen to this album, I do see like performance, live performance with dancing mm-hmm. and movement and costumes and lights.
Totally.
And it's very theatrical.
It is. I think it's because we're background.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, writing in that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, influenced by different types of genre of music, but it all kind of has that performance theater feel.
Are there mm-hmm. artists that are... I always ask when I have like up and coming artists that are younger, often in the genre of hip hop, are there artists that you would work with, that you would like to work with that are more commercial,
mm-hmm.
you know, or more, you know, globally known
mm.
in these efforts? Like, do you ever be like, you know, who would be dope for this?
Oh, that's an awesome question. I don't know. The community grassroots musicians are really, I feel like, where my heart is.
Yeah.
So I'm actually, yeah, like when I go to a concert, I rather go to something that's community based, more raw.
Yeah.
Than
yeah.
something polished. So that's just kind of my, really, I would love to, I do, you know, I want to just hear, like, I think, I guess I'll say it this way. I think I'm always activating against what is quality music, what is quality art, right? And how we put value to music and why we make music. And I make music for expression. I don't make music to be good at it. I never have. Mm. And so when I'm making music with people, I don't really care to get the most famous person or
yeah.
I don't care about celebrityhood.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel more when, you know, it's, a kid or an elder saying, hey, I have this song.
Mm-hmm.
Let me hear it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that there's a deeply implicit critique of capitalism in your work because you're not trying to commodify and mass produce
Mm-mm.
something that's very shallow.
Yeah.
You know, you're actually interacting with life and using art as a means to do that. I once heard a critique of, you know, there was this polarity between Western art and First Peoples art,
mm-hmm.
and that First Peoples art has a purpose. So it's not like a bowl sitting inside of a glass box for us to observe. You actually eat out of the bowl.
Yeah,
like you use it in daily activity.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that yeah. that reflection seems pertinent here. Like mm-hmm. your art is a means for processing and engaging in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the art is the collective.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So next, looking forward, you've got August coming up. What's some of the other work that you're engaged in? Because you were one of the first Fields Fellows. That's mm-hmm. how you and I met.
Yeah, with you.
Yeah, we got the Fields Fellowship, and we got a ton of money, and we were one of four artists of color.
Yep.
Yep. And now we moved on, and we're doing other things. So what are some of the, what's some of the advocacy work you do?
Yeah. Really what the common thread of my work is always addressing isolation. Mm. And working as a collective. Those are always the themes of everything that I do. And all the work that I do is always an ask from the community. That's just kind of how I discern the work that I do.
Mm-hmm.
My last project was, they call it the Singing Mural in Old Town.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an augmented reality mural. And yeah, it's right there, 6th and Cooch, and it's to celebrate queer lives and queer advocacy. And so we had a huge interdisciplinary team.
Mm-hmm.
The Portland Lesbian Choir, Portland Gay Men's Chorus, Maybell Community Singers.
Mm-hmm.
I composed a piece called It's Raining Love,
mm-hmm.
and had all those voices recorded. And from that composition, It's Raining Love, this mural was created. So I contracted an artist and an AR person. I mean, this team was so huge.
Wow.
And everyone, you know, as they held it, it transformed into something more loving. That's what I noticed, because people are always saying, oh, you want to keep the team small. We're at capacity. And I'm trying to challenge that, too, like how we make art. people who want, who have a desire to be a part of it. I think there's always space for people. But that was my last project. And we're going to be at PDX Design Festival doing a panel talk about it.
Okay.
So it's AR, community, and how we're bringing technology, how can we use technology to connect community.
So this this mural is on 6th and Cooch.
Mm-hmm.
You said it's
on the side of the old Embers. The old,
yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That spot?
Yeah, but you said it was like an AI augmented reality mural.
Yeah, so you hold up your phone.
Okay.
And you hear the voices come out of the wall. So you hold up your phone and then the voices come out of the wall from this composition, It's Raining Love, which is, I deconstructed the song It's Raining Men, Hallelujah,
right,
because
right.
I used to dance to that at Embers. So so I was like trying to, you know, bring back the queer
the
anthems
spirit, yeah.
from my generation. And then what happens is images are coming, they're coming out of the wall with the voices.
Uh-huh.
That you can interact with. So it's the interaction is, it also keeps that allyship alive, and the wall tells you how to be an ally, like celebrate, liberate, come out, be free. All this. Anyway,
I just this is deeply personal. There, I'm over here smiling like my face is about to crack, and it's because like I'm wrestling with this really intensely personal like death event in my life.
Yeah,
you know, I'm about to go to my grandma's funeral in Chicago. But you would be the type of person who my grandmother would definitely be like, that woman is the devil.
Because
when I'm listening to you talk about this mural, I'm like, she's conjuring poltergeists through the phone, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and some of the activism too is like, this was just on my own end, uh-huh. is that when I talk about spiritual trauma, right? I see that. And as a queer person, part of that fear of coming out is, you know, you're going to hell, right? And so the mural says hallelujah. So it's reclaiming spiritual language, mm-hmm. reclaiming our place in belief if we choose to, reclaiming how we praise. And because... so I just got away with painting the word hallelujah on the side of a gay bar.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah. I think
wow,
so there's a lot of different,
you're a sorcerer indeed.
There's a lot of different activism in that wall.
It just made me wonder what the origin of the word hallelujah is. But we don't have time for that right now for me to like going into Google on my laptop. But Crystal, it's been really, really nice to have you and talk about
this
fascinating topic and the work that you do. If people wanted to follow you online, can they find you?
They can find me. Go to Activate Arts Now, and that's my artist's website.
Okay.
And yeah, my number's on there, my email, just
.com.org.net activatearts.
.com.
Okay. And then we were going to go out with the same song, Will You Hold Me? But we have a couple other songs. And so let's look here. We've got Changed.
Let's do Body.
Let's do Body.
Body's the one that people really loved.
Okay. Thank you for tuning in to Culture in Motion. I'll see y'all, or y'all will, you know, we'll find each other the third Wednesday of next month. And this is Body, part of the Last Words project. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming on, Crystal.
Thank you, Mike.
Peace.
of your body. To ask forgiveness, my bad, I forgot to ask permission. My bad, I forget, forgive submission to anything that keeps me from living. This breath, take it from the belly to the head. Next step, take it with a smile over dread of death. The moment never given, in the end it's dead. It's the moment you accept presence. Open the teardrops, unwrap what fear box inside, and hide when your time rise. Stand in light skies with wide eyes, arms high, hands twinkle in the starry night. My bad, I do not need forgiveness. My bad, you do not need permission. All bad if we forget the only mission. Let go of everything that keeps us from living.
See it, hear it, taste it, feel it. Love your body, baby.
Love your body. If there's only one thing to take away from that song, it's...
Do it again.
It's that.
Do it again.
He can.
Love your body!
Thank you.